coming in. I'd like to personally thank Jim for that presentation. It was spot on.
We call him the Waco Angel. Bring on the Presbyterians. We have only a limited amount of time to do an infinite variety of things, so it's always frustrating and yet intense. So I echo all of our sentiments to thank Jim for this clear seeing back to the roots of our traditional world. And I think what I so deeply appreciate about that, not only the clarity with which Jim presented, but we get to hear the evolution of our brothers and sisters in the Jewish stream. They have evolved in a parallel way to our own evolution as Islam has evolved, and it's easy for us to listen to our own people commenting on the roots of the Jewish world, but it's so much better, I think, to begin with their seeing and then to comment. And so I think the presentation really reverses what we typically do as Christians. We like our scholars, and they are wonderful scholars in many respects, but we need to hear the Jewish world seeing of their own inner evolution, their own spiritual evolution. So, Jim, thank you for that. It's remarkable. So last night we began to sketch out what it means to begin to listen to the angel of prophecy in a world of chaos. And so the world that we're living in at this particular moment is forcing us to go back, in a certain sense, to the roots of things and to listen to the prophetic heart. And so what Jim is saying is that the divine is not impassive, not distant, but deeply, deeply involved in this moment. And so the messengers are being sent. And of course, as you know, I'm sure the word angel is actually a translation of the Greek word for messenger. The messengers are being sent. The divine voice is being heard. The divine pathos is deeply interested in the suffering of this particular moment. And we are the listeners. That's the heritage of our tradition. That it isn't that there's some booming electronic voice across the surface of the earth. It is those sensitive souls who begin to listen to the voice of the messengers. And the messengers are now being sent. So we're in a mode of recovery, and what the world is beginning to experience in the midst of the chaos, and I don't know if all of you will be able to see this exactly, but we'll try it. In the midst of this upheaval, which is clearly increasing, and even if it wasn't political, which it is now, political across the face of the earth, political chaos, immigrants pouring out of places because of the political chaos. The earth itself is in chaos. That is absolutely evident, that the earth itself is in a chaotic state. Everywhere you look, everywhere you listen, you realize those that watch the earth carefully are saying, it's chaotic. Things are not going the way they go. Ocean currents are shifting. We know the rise in temperature, the weather. So many things are shifting in this chaos. And so what is happening to us is we're beginning to see the real as opposed to the way we typically want to see it. We want to be comfortable, but now there's an unveiling, and that is the word apocalypse. So we're in the moment that our tradition says there will be an unveiling of the unreal to the real. And so that is a shock. That's a waking up. And then there will be a prophetic voice of the messengers for those who are sensitive enough to listen. So the voice does not stop, the word does not stop, but it continues to echo across the generations and across the ages. And our tradition says it will increase in intensity as the chaos increases. So we see the chaos, but we tend to not understand that the pathos of God is an outpouring of this burning that we begin to feel within our own being. And so that image last night was the beginning of the burning, to feel the intense pressure that is already inside of us. So, Ronnie, would you turn off the lights, and we'll use some of this material from some images. And what I would like to... Pardon me? I don't know. I don't want to answer to that. Yes, please do.
My age and younger people, our children are saying, we've never seen anything like this. Everything, it feels like the earth is shifting into this. But I look back to World War I and World War II, and I'm curious how people were feeling at that time. Were people trying to release this and so?
They had to be. They had to be. But the question of intensity, exponential intensity, I mean, the world has always had chaotic outpourings. There's no moment in history in which there hasn't been the chaotic outpouring. But the earth has never been in this kind of crisis before. World War II was not like this.
Do you feel like this is absolutely much more intense?
It's exponentially larger. It's engulfed the world.
And we have ISIS who wants to bring them.
That's, one of the manifestations
for
sure.
But the other thing we hadn't had before is this instant experience of things all over the world through the media.
Yes.
So we know right now. What's happening at this moment.
Moment by moment.
Right.
That's right.
And so we are invested in personally and spiritually.
So maybe we see this image that we started with last night as the prophetic burning. That the pathos of God within us. And we should expect that instead of avoid it. And out of this unveiling, out of the wisdom of the prophetic voice, comes, in fact, the wisdom which will allow us to speak to the situation or allow us to respond to the situation. So the clarity that we're beginning to have is a clarity about our own soul, about the nature of the world, to strip away blindness, to strip away ignorance, to allow things to be seen, and to open up a big space inside of us for the message of the messengers, the angels, to begin to give us direction. Why is that important? The reason it's important is that in an unstable world, people on the horizontal level seek for power. They accumulate power in order to be sure that they can manage the chaotic forces to their benefit or to increase the vision that they particularly have. We're not wanting that. What we're wanting is not the increase of power along the horizontal axis, but the increase of understanding and insight and seeing along the vertical axis. So the reason that we're intent is that the power that is available from the angels is in fact the only thing that is going to be able to give us insight or wisdom how to respond to this world. So the accumulation of power along the horizontal axis, which is what political structure is attempting to do, is not in fact our job. Our work is to open ourselves to the vertical dimension and the download that is beginning to occur. And our prophets say, expect it. Expect it. The need for it is great. That what we're receiving from the past is, in fact, wisdom flowing out of those experiences that men and women have had from the past, which we call Sophia Perennis, that seeing, which has been downloaded through the centuries and been left to us as a repository. But now, in our world, something new is breaking in, and we're the listeners. And it's hard for us to imagine that we could be downloading something as important as the Bhagavad Gita in our day, or as the prophetic word in the day in which the Hebrew prophets lived. What about our day? This is the day of download. And it's that particular word that is so critical and so crucial to us as we begin to make our way across this amazing terrain. So last night, as we looked at these particular aspects, we are beginning to touch this, what we might call, vertical power, this vertical intensity that is not for ourselves, but it is a gift that we're being asked to give for the life of the world. The angels have access, the messengers from the divine have access, and what they begin to give us is what a doctor would give when you go into a doctor's office, that you receive a kind of diagnosis from a higher perspective. You go to a doctor to receive a kind of diagnostic awareness of what is causing the chaos. And then you begin to understand that the doctor sees a pattern of symptomatology which can be addressed. And then a doctor, in a certain sense, a healer, is someone who brings the prophetic voice from a higher and more and different position. So that's our world. That's our practice. And that is our particular gift from the divine. So our tradition begins with the appearance of these messengers. And this is an image, of course, in a European style, of what that beginning point was, which we began to talk about last night. These are the ways that our ancestors envisioned those messengers coming from the vertical axis. Notice the ears of this particular messenger. I'm always looking at little details. And the earrings. You didn't know that angels wore earrings, right? And then Donnie pointed out to me that there is an amazing image in this angel's hand. That's a pine cone. That's always good for what, Donnie? Tell
him. Pineal gland.
The pineal gland.
Oh, God.
The pineal gland. No, seriously. Pineal gland.
Interesting that he's wearing a watch.
Yes.
He is wearing a watch.
It's a Fitbit.
Yeah, it's a Fitbit. An angelic Fitbit, you know. So this is the strength of those messengers that appeared across the world that brought prophetic voice. We see these messengers perhaps traditionally in this way, not a difficult image for us to contemplate, one that would clearly fit into our way of seeing. And the reality of multiple dimensions beyond space and time being filled with these messengers. And these messengers coming out of the center of all reality towards these other dimensions of being. This image, the Dure image, is one that we're familiar with. A host of messengers that come and bring the prophetic voice. This is at the roots and at the heart of our tradition. But what has happened, I think, in our tradition is that we've moved away and we've lost the angel. We've begun bits and pieces have fallen out. It doesn't feel as though that we're in the presence of these messengers. They kind of get lost until we actually experience something more like that. And so who would listen to this? That's not a strong prophetic voice. But this has filled the popular imagination as to what these messengers are. It's just a little peck on the cheek. You know, it's a little arrow to the heart, it'll bring a lot of romance, you'll feel good. No, that's never been it. And in the last several years, a number of us, and me more, have gone to one of the wonderful Oriental traditions, and this last time I went to Ethiopia, I began to really pay attention, just because I was given kind of a message before I left for Ethiopia last August, to pay attention to the angels, to look to see what another Oriental Christian world saw in the angels. I want to just go through a little few series because it's very instructive. And I realized there was something about the Ethiopian world that paid attention, and I said to many of you, and you've heard this, that one of the persons that I, and many of you know, Sintayo Chajao, who is a messenger in his own world, in his own right, looked at me square in the eyes and he said, "Glenn, every day the angels are talking to me." And I believe him. When you go into a church, Debre Birhan Bursano, and this is the one in the city of Gondar, the ceilings, it's about not quite this size, but the ceiling is filled with these angels, the hosts. So the way that we would imagine the hosts of angels maybe out there around God, an Ethiopian would see the hosts of angels hovering right inside the church, right inside their life, right inside their world. And then they would fill their space, helping people to envision what these messengers. But Sintayu said to me, "The messengers are coming to me, telling me things." And since I've left, I've continued to hear what the messengers are telling him, and it's remarkable to me. But they see these messengers appearing in their lives in a constant way, bringing word from the divine, and they're strong, they're powerful, they're attentive, they're bringing word to the average Ethiopian. So that the average Ethiopian begins to realize that they're being guarded. This particular image is the Daniel image of Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego image, and the angel in the fiery chaos that these three Hebrew men were experiencing, the angel was there with them. What's interesting about this particular image is that Ethiopians believe that the divine is turning them into angelic messengers. This happens to be a human Ethiopian who became angelic in his life, and you can see at the bottom there's a foot missing. It's a whole legend, a whole story of this particular saint in which through suffering, through divine pathos, through human pathos, this figure becomes angelic. And it's such an interesting vision that we can be, humans should be, they are being led to be angelic. And they're meaning messengers with the prophetic download to speak to the situation. And so Ethiopians honor these humans who were turned into angels, who were turned into messengers. And there's a whole symbolism about this particular image, some of which I remember and understand, and others is new to me. But here's something interesting. In this particular image, you can see the angels. They stylize the angel with the face and the wings all the way around this particular image. But there's a certain sense of presence and consciousness bringing the good news, and you can see the four gospel images around that central face, they portray this as a form of consciousness which is everywhere. And so this angelic presence, and then look at the other faces. Those are wisdom faces, where the divine is being, the message is being brought to the human world. And the angel brings the messenger, and I guess those are big ears, or the ways of listening to the angelic presence. Isn't that an interesting image?
It's really.
It's stylized, it's very culturally specific. We think it was a very interesting artifact from the culture of Ethiopia, but they see it far differently. They don't see it as a work of art, they see it as a teaching, that the angels are there communicating and we're the listeners. And so this particular listening is in fact our responsibility. So the question is, how could we in our world begin to do something to help ourselves and our people, the people that we are responsible for, pay attention to this same kind of energy? So I asked Allison to help me envision it as I was preparing for some of this work myself. And this was...
Lynn?
Yes?
Mind interrupt? Go back to that.
Go back.
I'm really struck by the different expression on each of the faces of the receivers.
Oh, good for you. You're seeing that. That's right. Good for you. That's perfect. So it's an amazing image. It's a sacred image. It's a teaching image. It's helping Ethiopian Christians pay attention to this voice and not think of it as something in the past, but thinking of it as something in the present. So when you walk into it, church, they're over your head. When you look around, there you see, and then you see humans who became angelic messengers, and then this particular image is you yourself being given a download.
There's a real vertical or horizontal. I mean the faces that I guess I would say are the angels. I don't know which angels or what's not, but. The faces that look more human, they're always going left and right. And the other faces are always going up, the eyes are going up and down, or straight at you.
So interesting. See, I hadn't even looked at it with those interpretive eyes, so great.
They're either horizontal, left and right.
I'm taking you to Ethiopia next time.
I mean,
yes. Seeing so many wonderful things, and every icon is like that, and their churches are filled with these images. So you know, you typically, as a tourist, are taken through as quickly, like a docent in a museum. You don't get to stop and really reflect, but that's what we're doing at this minute. I don't know if this image is clearly communicating to you. I don't know if it would communicate to the average modern American who goes to Walmart. I'm not sure. Very good, Sally. That's perfect. Yes, I'm very grateful for that. But modern astrophysics says the universe is a multi-layering of energy, a swirling of energies. And as modern astrophysics begins to describe these, they're edging closer and closer to the idea of it being a conscious universe, the pattern being consciously formed. So this is a beautiful fractal pattern that suggests a lot is going behind the scenes, going on behind the scenes. The angelic energy is shaping things. It's moving human consciousness. It's beginning to act in energetic ways. The divine pathos is an energy field. We walk into an energy field. This kind of language, I'm changing my linguistics, because this is language that maybe the modern human can begin to understand based on what we're discovering about the nature of the universe. Or intelligent energies, in fact, having a kind of angelic, we begin to imagine them as a messaging that goes across the dimensions of the universe that we inhabit. So these are just introductory images to say the fractal patterning behind the chaos, which is part of chaos theory. There is a patterning behind it, and it might look something like this. This might be the way we need to begin to envision it. And I'm embedded not only in the chaos, I'm embedded in these images. Yes?
Have you seen the article last week that, and I guess this has been coming on since 1990, that the universe is really like a hologram? That it is really two-dimensional?
Yes, being reflected into a three-dimensional.
Being three-dimensional, therefore all that energy is right there.
Yeah.
We can touch all of it. It was a stunning article.
Where was it?
I don't remember.
It's
a scientific journal. I don't remember which one it was either.
I think it was two-dimensional hologram.
This particular image is created by Allison to begin to help us make a shift to the more personal, the more sword-like, focused energy that comes to be brought into our own world. It is a message from the eternal, but it has a sword-like focus. And this is a beautiful image with lots of things to see and to contemplate. So these are new icons in which we begin to perceive this fractal patterning behind the chaos. And that fractal patterning has something to do with our own lives. It's focused upon us. That the prophetic voice is maybe more like that than we might imagine the angel with bits and pieces missing or the Cupid. So, yes.
In this time when we're so chaotic and our focus is here and there and there, I think that is so important to bring each individual to their own solid focus.
Good. I think that's why Michael and Gabriel and so forth, Gabriel not always, but Michael for sure, always has the pointed sword. And the point of the sword is a focus. It's not only a protection, it's a focus. And this particular image, it's remarkable that we have this angelic focusing on human consciousness. And this particular one is just an amazing one to contemplate. It's powerful. It's not a Cupid. It's not a peck on the cheek. There are energies in the chaos that begin to manifest themselves. And here's where it begins to be personal. That these energies begin to focus upon ourselves as receptors of cosmic consciousness. That each human being is exquisitely designed to be a receptive instrument of these energies, these messages that are coming to us at this particular moment in the chaos, and they affect us. And so this image is a beautiful kind of modern way of saying, don't think of the angelic focus as something cutesy, a Hallmark card. You begin to realize that the point of that energy, the site of that energy is inside of you. It's not inside the institutional church. It's inside of you. That's where the point of the focus begins to arrive. No, that's totally masculine. Jillian, what's wrong with you? Never mind. We'll talk about it later.
The energy is coming into our throat, into our voice.
That's great. Yeah. Now, I happen to agree with both of you. I think the divine feminine is, in fact, this compassionate focus as well. And here, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that was clearly a bonding image.
A birthing image.
Birthing.
Oh, birthing image.
Clearly, duh.
Good for you. That's good. I love that scene. But it's
on the throat chakra.
It is.
It is very, very important. Part of that chakra is listening.
That's true. And
not,
in
not
speaking.
It's
both.
It's connected with the ears also.
Right. So these are just a series to awaken us imagistically to what, in fact, we are experiencing. And here is the burning fire of the prophet and the voice of the angel, again at the throat, the point. I mean, all of this is an amazing set of images, and these are not Cupids. These are something entirely different. So this is a kind of restoration, and maybe, in fact, it is a way of saying to us, when Yeshua, it says in analog 39, I think, of Philip, Yeshua is on the mountain, and he cries out at the mountain of transfiguration, he cries out to the divine, come bind our angels to the icon. It's an amazing statement. Clearly, most of the disciples didn't hear that because they were so distracted on the mountain. They didn't hear that. But that particular phrase got picked up, and it was transmitted across the Oriental world. And Yeshua's intent at that moment was to cry out that the angel and the icon would be bound together. There's something just so powerful and prophetic about that particular moment. So this is the moment, perhaps, when the angel is being bound to us. And Gary sent this to me this morning. It's a beautiful image. And the quote of it is by Wilburn, who says, "When I open my window in the morning, I look out and I realize that the world around me is full of the messengers." Something to that end. And so you sent me that this morning, Gary, at 4 o'clock, thank you. And but I realized, this is a realization that the angel is not the angels, the messengers, the fractal patterning is not only to us, it is also to the world around us. And it's those who are sensitive to the voice of the Spirit that is beginning to say, all right, we'll listen. I'll be there. And the question is, when the chaos begins, and when the angelic prophetic presence, the burning fire of the divine pathos begins to be expressed, will I be able to stand up out of the matrix of flatland and begin to connect to the pattern in my own consciousness? So this is an image that we've used, but it's so important to contemplate this particular image, because we have the matrix of the flatland in which we live, duality, and then the beginning, as Yeshua says, to stand up out of it. I read the quote from Logian 28 last night. And begin to see what is true, to become a three-dimensional figure connected. And when you're no longer drunk along the horizontal axis, you're able to stand out of it. Then you connect to that presence, that voice, that seeing. Here is another beautiful image that was more recently created. And Allison, just speak about this, if you don't mind, a minute.
That is a seated Kuan Yin. She's a statue in the museum in Kansas. She's about 90 inches tall, and she's been with me for many years. She is royal. She is seated. She is in. She is woman. She is the goddess of compassion. But if you notice her, the way she sits, it's completely at peace, and it's a kind of equipoise in the middle of chaos. So for me, she was very much the response initially to the election.
what's her name?
She's Kuan Yin, which is she's the Chinese Tara. So there's Tara from Tibet, and then she's Kuan Yin is the Chinese version, and you could say Mary is the Christian version.
So again, back to the divine feminine that Julie was pointing to. This, of course, image that we know, what allows us then to be in the chaos a transmitter of that larger light which is behind us, offered to the world just as it is needed. And I'm always so intrigued by this fact that we offer this light from our own being, from our own royalty, and it is given maybe even in little drops. Maybe, you know, it's just offered where it can be offered at a particular moment where a person can hear a little bit. And what I love about this is the figure, and we've often noted it, it's a selflessness that is the most powerful part of this. The beauty of this selflessness to it. What we are told is that to hear the still small voice is that we need to be contemplative. So we need to go into the inner chamber, as Yeshua says in the canonicals and in the analogues of Philip, shut the door and begin to listen to the source that is speaking within us. It is always speaking. So that has been a part of the Johannine tradition, that this voice of the Logos, the Word, is always speaking at the level of the heart. The trouble is we cannot often get to it. Because of the chaos around us, we're not listening to the voice. This path inward to the source is the contemplative path. So not only is there the presence that is speaking inwardly, but there is the practice of listening to that presence. So these beautiful images, once again, which says, at the heart is where the energy is, not at the level of the mind. And it's available when we begin our own deep inner listening at that particular level. And that's when those energies arrive. And our patristic tradition, and I don't have the quote right in front of me, says it's in that place when the full life of the divine begins to show up and we begin to hear it and to begin to listen. So there's something about contemplation in this particular work that we're doing that allows us to deal with the dystopia. So I just want to go through this series quickly, and some of you have seen this series, but when we look at the world from a distance, it's beautiful, this beautiful blue ball, and there's clearly civilization stretching across it. We're happy to be on the planet, but when you arrive on the planet, you go, heck is going on? And in the midst of our experience of the planet, we can begin to feel the dystopia, that it's something is working that is bringing chaos. And as we walk across the flat surface of the world, in the midst of it, we begin to detect it. And now that particular chaotic is breaking apart old traditions and maybe emptying them out or unveiling their emptiness. And so we're feeling that dystopia. And we ourselves, this is sort of a dreamlike dreamscape that says, don't you often feel like you're just crawling through mud? It, you know, here's this beautiful planet, but my experience of it is often that I'm stuck. I'm crippled, even. I'm vulnerable. And when you hit the streets, they're not always beautiful. In fact, many of the streets are like that. The streets of our world were. And there's this feeling of increasing dread and the possibility of further disintegration and collapse. Pray to God that that doesn't happen. But in some places, look at Aleppo. It looks exactly like that. Many places in the world are exactly like that. And people are living in that. And so
our experience of the shifts and the falling of things, the falling apart. In another image, which replaces Quinn Yun with Tellus Allison.
So if you can argue it.
Yes.
You have Kali. You have Kali. That's Kali with the necklace of skulls, trampling on. I think it's. You can see if you go lower, so you can see what she's. Well, she's trampling on the horizontal. In many of the images, she's trampling on humans. It's a metaphor for ego. So she comes in as the slayer, as the destroyer, as the. Black mother.
So would, if there was a world that was looking more and more like that, dystopian, even Jeremiah says it may take Kali to bring about a new world. And our tradition has the four horsemen as Kali-like figures.
Can you expand that?
Yes, this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
The four horsemen coming across the chaos. In order, as we showed this one last night, to make things new again. So we have our own Kali in our text that is not unlike the Kali tradition of the Hindu texts. Revelation. It's in the Bible.
You're a Baptist minister.
She's not a Baptist. She's Lion Jesus. We're going to call her Lion Lynn.
Lion. Since Linda doesn't know the four horsemen, say what they are, because that's important.
Would you say that?
Well, pestilence, famine, death, and what's the fourth one?
War.
Yeah.
So.
Those are the Kali figures.
We got that.
Yeah, we have them in our world. We didn't tend to, enjoy the Kali figure as opposed to our own, but they're in our world, in our prophetic world. So what we begin to text is this. So in the dystopia, we begin to detect the presence of spirit that we chanted this morning. So we were chanting about this, that the golden light breath of spirit was beginning to weave its own pattern in and out, and perhaps more sensitive to this spirit because of the dystopia. For this image that we showed last night, we begin to detect the pattern of the Logos behind the chaos, the fractal pattern of the Logos behind the chaos that begins to manifest itself. And here is a full image that Allison created. And you can see the Logos pattern behind the chaos. But it's beginning to shine through. We are the Logos detectors. If we have a contemplative heart of listening. And this allows us to see this beautiful patterning that emerges right behind the chaos and to respond not to the chaos, but to the pattern that's behind it, the beauty of the pattern. Our tradition gives us that capacity. It says that as the chaos increases, our role is to pay attention. And therefore, as contemplatives, we begin to listen to that at the level of our own heart, and we begin to transmit a story of beauty. As opposed to a story of chaos, a story of divine compassion and pathos for the world. And I love this particular image Allison again created, the beauty of the fractal patterning behind the chaos and the beauty of the divine compassion, the love of the divine for humankind, for the world. And this, again, another beautiful, intense image of the entwining of the divine and the human in embrace. It's a very astounding image that Allison has created, one that we have used and will use in the future. I'm giving away a bit of the store for some of the things that we're going to be doing in the future, but this image gives us an idea of us beginning to detect what Yeshua detected, which was we have intimate contact with the divine. And this intimacy begins to be, have its effect and beauty upon the earth. So the answer to the chaos is not political argument as much as it is the detection of beauty and its effect upon the earth. And the divine says, we begin to make all things new. So I just use these illustratively this morning to excite our imaginations. I want to refer to a text. Some of you have already heard me say this. Our Abbot Ronnie said to me, this is the text for this moment. This is the Bhagavad Gita. This Eknath Eswaran, in particular translation, is just exquisitely written and done. But I've been reading it through. I've read the Bhagavad Gita and other translations, and this one I'm making my way through it. I'm about a third of the way through. Try to read it every morning to remind myself. The Gita is one of the ancient texts from the other side of the world that says many things similar to our own Book of Revelations, for example. The Gita says this. It's quoted almost at the beginning. At the beginning of time, says Krishna, Lord Krishna, I delivered two paths for the pure in heart upon the earth. One was called Jnanan Yoga, which is translated the contemplative path of spiritual wisdom. I gave that path to humanity. And then I gave Karma Yoga, the active path of selfless service. And so this contemplative path of spiritual wisdom and the active path of selfless service, which I think is beautifully mirrored in this particular, these two paths are being combined. This is the work of the order, to combine these two paths so that we balance between them. And that seems to be Yeshua's point in the Gospel of Thomas, that we bring balance or unity to two things. He often describes it as movement and rest, or as the masculine and the feminine, the right hand and the left hand. There's this need to bring integration and balance. Again, the traditions are saying, in the midst of the world that we're experiencing, what wisdom seekers do is to bring together the contemplative heart and the active path of self-service. So the Bhagavad Gita says that those who are established in wisdom live in continuous, unbroken awareness that they are not their perishable bodies, but they are the, I'm going to translate a little bit different, the angel of their own being. That you're not your body, but who you are is your, the angel of your own being. Yeshua says, combine our angel to our icon. So if you begin to say, okay, I'm the icon on this earth of something that is eternal, and Yeshua says, all right, bind the icon of you to your angel. And the Gita says exactly that.
Those who are established in wisdom live in continuous, unbroken awareness that they are not their perishable bodies only, but they are the angel of their own being. Further, they see that this same self is in everyone. For the angel is universally present in all things. And then it goes on to say, that's from the Gita in this particular translation, page 86. It goes on to say, I therefore, Lord Krishna, the great teacher, the incarnation of the divine presence in the earth, says, you therefore must honor and cherish the shining ones, the angels, as they honor and cherish you. Through this honor and love, you will attain the supreme good. All human desires are fulfilled by these shining ones who come to you, who are pleased by your selfless service. But anyone who enjoys the things given by the shining ones without offering selfless service act as thieves in this world. Amazing statement. So sometimes we need to combine to get out of our traps theologically or out of our narrowness ideologically. We need to listen to this stream coming to us from sources that are sometimes outside of our tradition to awaken us. So we're listening to the prophetic voice of the ancient prophets, we're listening to the Gita, which is a book for warriors in the midst of chaos who are saying exactly the same things, but we need to hear it perhaps in another voice, or we need to envision it the way that these particular images that I've gone through just briefly this morning envision it. I would like to pass out a handout that I collected over the last weeks of the need that we have, because we do feel vulnerable, we do feel weak, and I came across and made a collection of wisdom's voice coming from lots of different directions, speaking to this particular experience that we're having in the world of feeling vulnerable, of not making any difference whatsoever because we're just one individual. Last night we saw the butterfly effect video that said, no, what's so interesting is that one tiny little thing that has huge effects across the face of the earth, and in particular at a moment of chaos, particularly from those who are beginning to listen sensitively and critically, to hear the diagnostics of the angel messengers, and also to deliver wisdom as to how to live in the midst of it. So this particular little handout is just a series of beautiful quotes, reminders coming to us when the world gets dark. And Leonard Cohen last night, in that beautiful presentation that was Karen and Sally did for us, perhaps the divine says, I do want it darker. I need it, as we heard this morning from Jeremiah, in order to bring all things new, you have to unveil. So how do we live in the midst of this? How do we listen? How do we become contemplative? How do we gather to ourselves our own inner sovereignty and bind it ourselves by that? It takes each other. It takes the voice coming both from the horizontal wisdom traditions and from the vertical download that we each make listening to the continuing word in the midst of us. So this is quickly done. I feel it in a certain way. It's just too fast and too inadequate. We
we don't have enough time to integrate, but I want you to feel that your work and our work together is this caravan sarai gives us opportunity to listen, is a moment in which we become as open as we possibly can to the divine pathos, to the messengers who are coming to us, to trust the prophetic tradition. It says, I won't leave you. I will not leave you in the midst of this. The world is difficult. It is not going to be easy. Yeshua warned us, it won't be easy. You will be, you know, it will be difficult. I'm not trying to, you know, gild the lily for you. I'm telling you it will be difficult, and especially if the chaos increases. We're here, and I love this particular, and some of you saw this handout earlier, but it's a quote that many of you read by Clarissa Pinkola Estes. You were made for these times, and I'm convinced of that. And if you haven't found it, you can look at this online. It's a wonderful article that begins to encourage us to trust the voice of the messengers inside us.